This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hola, buenos dias, buenas tardes, and buenas noches. I think that pretty much covers whatever time of day you might be listening to this. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and this will be the last day of this five-day report. You'll be hearing me trying to attempt any of my Spanish, or any kind of Spanish. My Spanish is not that great, obviously. This podcast is being brought to you by Eric Citron, our friend who is the owner and proprietor of theperfecttrick.com. And if you haven't already heard, I want to reiterate again about the Cyber Monday sale that's going to begin on Monday the 20th. That actually is going to have over 2,400 items that are going to be up for sale with 80% off. It's amazing. And over 350 of those items will be brand new to this sale. So also, that if you're going to be wanting to tune in and start to order some of these things, the sale actually begins at 8 o'clock, that's 8 a.m., on November the 20th, and that's Pacific time. So that's just check your clocks, and it's not going to run forever. It's going to be ending at midnight on the 4th of December. So again, it's going to be the Cyber Monday and actually a Cyber Week that you can go to theperfecttrick.com and get tremendous discount over there on some magic items. So if you're wanting to buy something for Christmas, now is the time to do it. Well, starting on the 20th is the time to do it. And the place to do it is theperfecttrick.com. Go check them out. And also, by the way, I would like to once again make a pitch to you to consider being a friend of the Magic Word and helping us with your financial donation, because on November the 21st actually will be my birthday. Hey, so there you go. If you want to send me a nice birthday gift in the form of a financial donation to help support the Magic Word, and you can become a friend of the Magic Word and receive a lot of cool perks. If you join using patreon.com with a monthly pledge, you get some really cool things depending upon what level of pledge that you make. Just think of it as buying me a cup of coffee at least once a month. You don't have to do it once a week, although that'd be great. If you want to give a higher donation for monthly pledge, that'd be fine too. But the times that you listen to this podcast and you're enjoying a cup of coffee or something while you are going about your daily tasks or whatever and listening to this in the background, just think about having a cup of coffee with me and buying one for me too. So I sure would appreciate if you could float a little money over our way to help defray some of our expenses. So again, thanks a lot, and you can get that information over at themagicwordpodcast.com. And by the way, I do want to welcome our newest member of the Friend of the Magic Word, Mr. Stephen Maines. Thank you, Stephen, very much for your contribution, and welcome to the Friends of the Magic Word. And if you'd like to have your name mentioned on the podcast, we do that every time we have a new friend who is added. So if you want to be a friend, please send your information, and I will be glad to mention that as well, along with some other cool things you get. So again, Stephen, thank you, and welcome. Well, today is the fifth and final update of the five-day convention. I have been saying all along it's a five-day convention, November 7th through the 11th, but as it happened, actually there was nothing happening on the 11th. That's not technically correct, because there was a midnight show, and that was kind of an interesting show that was fraught with problems from the beginning. Again, let me go back and reiterate that this has really not been a conference or a convention in the conventional sense. It was really a festival for the people. And the last show that was presented was done in a busy salsa nightclub on a Saturday night at midnight. And that would have been at midnight on, I guess, that final day of the 11th, which was the last activity, actually. Anyhow, the people who were on there, Dave Cox was the MC and introduced one of the magicians from Cuba who did a quick change, and that was fine because it was done to music and it was visual. But when Dave was trying to talk with the audience, number one, they were not an English-speaking audience, and number two, it was very loud, a lot of strobe lights and flashing lights. It was like a busy discotheque, and he was doing some comedy mentalism, and it was kind of hard for them to get into it. Fortunately, there were a lot of American, I should say, English-speaking people who were magicians and guests who were down front, so they understood what was going on. And after the quick change was over, that act was over, then John Archer closed the show. And I know that John and Dave felt like that they were challenged, to say the least, and it was under a difficult situation. Yeah, it was later told to me something interesting, and that is that under the repressive communist regime there in Cuba, they have very few freedoms, but the three things they can do is that they can drink, they can dance, and they can make whoopee. And basically, we were in the way of them accomplishing all three of those things, because they were there to hook up with other people and kind of covey off in the corners and do whatever, and also salsa dancing and a lot of lights and everything. And then we were coming in and trying to show them some magic in this environment. So it was a very difficult environment with where they were, it was loud music and a lot of strobe lights and everything going on. And then they stopped immediately and then started the magic show. And I'm sure people are thinking, what the heck is this? What's going on? Nevertheless, the guys who performed were tremendous troopers and got standing ovation from the magicians in attendance, but I know that they felt like, oh my gosh, I'm pulling teeth here. This was very difficult, but they did a great job in the face of adversity. So kudos goes to all the magicians, to Dave Cox and the other local Cuban magician whose name his assistant I do not remember, and also to John Archer. Fantastic job, guys, and you really did, you showed us what a professional act should be. So, congratulations. So, today we're going to be featuring several conversations that we had during the following day, on that fifth day, as people were kind of hanging around and talking and reminiscing about what was going on, including getting a little bit of a take from John Archer as to how that he felt that things were going with his act that as well. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. So please welcome my guests here today from Day 5, update from Magic Cuba.
Magic Cuba. Magic Cuba, yeah.
One of the things, by the way, I'd like to point out about this event, which was a little bit different than others, is that this was really not a convention or a conference. Those of us who are used to attending magic conventions in the traditional sense will not find, and did not find, the typical kinds of things here, which, in other words, there were not necessarily there weren't any real contests per se. I mean, there was a un truco, which means a one-trick challenge. They had some close-up shows, they had some lectures, but the lecturers were not selling anything. Nobody brought anything to sell. It was something, they didn't even promote something, saying, hey, when you get back, you can buy it on my website or whatever. They were just teaching a few things, but for the most part, a lot of them were TED Talk type of things that were very interesting topics. But beyond that, of course, there were no dealers nor anything. The idea of this whole conference is really a festival, and the festival meaning that we were here in order to try to show magic to the Cuban people so that they can more fully appreciate magic as a performing art. The problem has been that this is not really, as I said, a traditional conference, and so those of you who missed it really missed it, because it was what I'd call a land cruise. This was the kind of thing in which that you pay a certain amount of money, and that it was all inclusive with the hotel and everything, but just for the registrations, all your food, three meals a day, and some mojitos, free drinks as well, and as well as all the shows that we got in and out, the bus transfers and taxis and everything. Very well put together, very well managed, even though, as you will hear John Rose and John Stetson talking, it was like a duck paddling or swan paddling feverishly under the water, but looking rather serene, as long as that you were ready to relax and lay back. So, again, understand that this was just a different kind of a conference. Again, really a festival. And I think that we had achieved our goal, that is that there were a lot of Cuban magicians who were able to perform in these different venues that they perhaps maybe never had performed before. More importantly, the Cuban people were able to see magic as it should be properly and professionally presented, so they can, again, more fully appreciate this as a performing art, meaning that maybe we'll have more magicians from Cuba performing more shows, and it will become more accepted, like the ballet and the orchestras and everything else that's part of their beautiful music culture here. So, just wanted to explain that so there won't be any confusion necessarily as to what kind of an event this really has been.
Magic Cuba. Magic Cuba, yeah. Magic Cuba.
Well, good morning. This is day five of the Magic Cuba Convention, and I say day five, as I understand it, I thought the convention was running 7 through 11, meaning 5 days, and typically when you go to a conference, that means, of course, that there's maybe something running up until about noon, or there's something going on in the morning or whatever. And actually, there was something, but it wasn't quite up till noon. I think that there was an activity that was scheduled for midnight last night, which technically, I guess, goes into the 11th, which means, therefore, yeah, okay, it's 7 through 11. So, anywho, thought we'd have just kind of a quick recap. I was going to ask a few people about kind of what their impressions were of the last evening's show, the way that they concluded. Now, first of all, we had Matt King's show with Michael Godot, and then afterwards we took a bus over to another venue, which was a music hall or Musica Theater something. We have talked with Chris Korn on many occasions, and even throughout this week that we've been hanging out and been chums, and so he's here again this morning, and we've just finished breakfast, and you've gotten things sorted with your phone, and we'll talk about that in a minute also. But I've got Chris with me this morning. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
What else? Morning. what did I try to say? Anyhow, good morning. So, last evening, what do you think of Max and Michael's show?
Oh, excellent. You know, I've probably seen Mac over the years close to 200 times, I would estimate.
Yeah.
That's how many times I've taken more first dates to go see his show when I lived in St. Louis.
Sure.
Especially because he would come to the Funny Bone. Uh-huh. When I was there, I met him as a teenager back in probably 87.
Was he? Well, wait a minute. Now, he was out there. I was going to say, it wasn't in Louisville. He was in Vegas by that time. Is that right? Or was he?
No, I don't think he was
traveling the comedy clubs back then.
Yeah, he was doing the club circuit.
Yeah. And so when you took your dates to see him and you knew him, and it's like, hey, I know an entertainer, a professional guy.
Right.
It was impressive.
Yeah. I think my date saw that I was more in awe than...
I thought one of the cool things was how that, even though he didn't speak Spanish to the group last night, that he wasn't deterred from using a Spanish-speaking person to come up on stage. And then when he used some money, he's like, I'm tempted to use that $100 bill, but I think I'll use the 20 kooks, the convertible money change. So, that's my thought.
He's a consummate professional. He's been in just about every single situation that you obviously can imagine. Out of the 200 times I've seen him, that was probably in the top five spectators I've ever seen him work with. That was fantastic. Yeah. Because every culture has different reactions.
Good point.
Know, some are more expressive. And it was especially noticeable to me that the Cuban culture, the women, she wasn't very self-aware on stage. Like, she wasn't self-conscious.
Conscious, right.
She wasn't like, oh my gosh. It was like she was up there.
Like if there could have been another group around
her.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Yeah, she was comfortable up there.
She was comfortable, right.
And it was, and wasn't trying to ham it up at all. Mm-hmm. She was very present.
Mm-hmm.
But every culture is different. Some people react more.
Well, her moments of astonishment were...
And her reactions were really cute.
Yes.
Really
genuine.
Cute.
Mm-hmm.
Genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And
even though there was a language barrier, the magic was visual.
Yeah. No, that made it even better. Right?
Yeah.
That made it... And it, you know, he's a pro, so it was great to see that. I had no doubt that that would go well.
Yeah. And so then we took the bus over to a nightclub, a discotheque, and it was a loud pumping music with strobe lights and everything like that. And then it's kind of like they're going to stop and we're going to do some magic. It's like the kids, I think, were kind of looking, where are we? What happened?
Yeah. Well, I think maybe, you know, in defense of the locals, they're told they're going to see a magic show. They don't really know. And they certainly weren't expecting a talking act.
And an English talking act.
And you can see, you know, even with the venue, which we'll talk about in a little bit, I guess, is the venue that Eric, Chad, and I worked, you know, was not, the stages were not built for anything except a band and dance act.
Right.
They were not meant
a low
on
ceiling.
Any level. Yeah, low ceiling.
Very intimate.
And the sight lines. The rooms are very long.
Uh-huh.
So it's not meant for any other style of performing than dance or a band. And so...
And you were doing close-up. You and Chad Long and Eric
And
so
we converted. It was... The way the room was set up for us to fail, basically. Because it was the stage the sight. There, right. there were pillars in the way.
Right.
Terrible sight lines. It would have been a nightmare. It would have been.
But you adjusted your.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So tell the audience what you did. The listeners, what you.
Yeah. So we had walked into the basement of a theater, basically, which is a little. It's a discotheque, mm-hmm. and it was really nice, but the stage was set up so that most of the room were on the left and the right sides of the stage.
Correct.
There was only a very small section that was actually in front of the stage.
So essentially, you can imagine a rectangular room, and you were on the edge of it rather than the end of it. So as you said, you had long
Yeah, we're like this long room. We're right in the middle, mm-hmm. and it's narrow.
Yes.
And so it was just poor sight lines. You would need... It would have been a very
right.
tough room to work the stage,
especially close up like the guy like
oh absolutely well,
right, doing
yeah
coins
and we just made we all had stand up material
of course
but we made an executive decision to we're just rearranging the room
yeah.
and we're gonna make either the audience can have you know we felt either the audience can have B material and be disappointed with that mm-hmm. not being able to see and hear anyway. And we weren't guaranteed that we would have microphones.
That's true.
So we didn't know if we were going to have mics. So
yeah.
we rearranged it to create a real intimate close-up setting, just like you would see, used to see a lot more when Al Goshman used to show up at a convention.
Right.
He would create his own setting, whether it was in the lobby of the hotel.
Right.
Goshman was amazing at that, at setting up.
Del Rey did that too.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
he brings his own table. Yeah,
yeah. That era, that mm-hmm. generation, got used to doing that. Pulling you set up the room, you create the setting
the
that you want.
Right.
And of course, you're going to upset the man. You know, the management and the yeah. well, we have to move all these tables. But we were team players, and we helped move things and construct the room the way that we wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
And it worked quite well,
oh.
you know, certainly, and by having people kind of surround you, and they were up close and intimate, and
yeah.
then people stand as necessary, because we only had, what, about 60 people there, if that, maybe 40, something like
no,
that?
No, it was closer to 60,
was it
50? For sure.
Okay,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a good size group, but everybody could see and certainly could hear and appreciate mm-hmm. that, you know, in that intimate type of situation.
Yeah.
Because it... using some coins, and just, I mean, Eric started off with the...
cylinder.
Yep.
Cylinder and coins, yeah.
And everybody could see and understand what was going on, and so yeah, it worked out very well. Kind of like you know what Ossie Wynn did his lecture yesterday, where that he had people just kind of coming and sitting around him. He was sitting on the edge of the stage, and he said, "Well, sit beside me, stand behind me, put some chairs on the stage, look down." Plus, everybody you know surrounded him, and so you know that worked out very well. So I think that's what you have to do is be adaptive, and that's unfortunately not what. You know, Dave Cox and John Archer were able to do last night. They had to work with the situation they were given. They could not really rearrange the room per se because they had a stage, but there were some strobe lights and things they could have and should have turned off that were distracting, that were there for just moments later. I mean, there's hard pumping salsa music, and then at about midnight, it's like, hey, we're going to have magicians. Kind of like, what? And they kept the lights on, and then they kind of came out, and it was a difficult situation.
Yeah, I've worked in the south of Spain quite a bit. And many of my shows were not until midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And same sort of thing. I had to go out of the way to have lights turned off. And that's not always so easy. They just don't want to listen. There's mm-hmm. no motivation for them to listen to you.
Right.
They don't care to listen to you.
Right.
They're just doing, you know.
Right. Well, they're used to that kind of environment where
yeah.
it is just music. It is a nightclub. And who are you to tell me, what my, you know, you'll be out of here and I'll still be here. You know,
yeah, and pretty much all their entertainment, you know, and if you look in other foreign countries, stand-up comedy doesn't exist.
That's a very good point.
It didn't exist, you know, very much in Spain.
Right.
Until recent years.
Well, one of the nice things I think here about Cuba is that they still do have a lot of nightclubs, unlike a lot of places throughout the U.S. in particular. So they're not venues where people could go to perform, even though the nightclubs really are geared more towards dance and salsa and everything. But there are at least are some stages. I think there are more here than we have, the U.S.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, as far as initial impressions of the convention, aside from about your phone, you got what happened to your phone?
Well, this is one of the few cities I've been to where you're allowed to carry a fifth of rum in your hand. I've seen about
like
a dozen people. Well, yeah, but in New Orleans, yeah, I see people with beers and drinks, yeah. but I don't see people walking around with a fifth
of bottle walking around
of liquor in their hand. And I was like, wow. You know, I took alcohol out of my diet about a year ago, but that would have been fun to walk around for, yeah. just carrying a fifth of rum, swinging off the bottle like a pirate. He was just hammered.
Yeah.
It was, and I was just walking out, and I'm not sure what his intention was. I don't know that it was to smash my phone, but he did a fine job. He executed it perfectly.
He might have been trying to steady himself. But
I think, he was knocking over tables and throwing lawn furniture, and it was very amusing for a while, yes. but he should have been put
so
in his
room.
So
now it's a cracked and useless brick
Yeah, it's a brick. It's a new paperweight. It's my Cuba paperweight.
Cuba paperweight. Yeah, you need to take
I'll get a sticker, a Cuba sticker. Put it on there.
Broken in Cuba.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but your impression overall then of Magic Cuba?
Well, it's the first time I've been, I came here really to see a little bit of Cuba. And, you know, as you learn with every culture from performing, it's you never know what the venue is going to throw at you or what
right.
what cultural differences will be a roadblock
right.
to you having a good time or things running smoothly, mm-hmm. whatever it might be, you know, things that you might need. You might think there's, you know, a 7-Eleven, and I haven't seen one convenience store anywhere we've gone, like just to go buy a water.
Right.
You know, I know they exist.
There are. But yeah, not many. I've walked around.
Yeah. So, it's just a matter of, I think it was an uphill battle
right.
working here for the organizers. That there is no, because of the way the country's run, there is no motivation for the people to do mm-hmm. something or do something well.
Right.
Even. Mm-hmm. They don't make any money. Average pay is $60 a month, I think they said.
Yeah, about like that. But then, again, tourism is their main import.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Entertainment doesn't seem to be very big other than music.
Music.
And dancing
That's true.
Here.
That's true.
See, the dancing
true.
Shows, there's not, you know.
Yeah.
And even I was talking to one of the young ladies that did the zombie ball. She did
yes.
really nice routine mm-hmm. at Mojitos. Magic and Mojitos, and she was saying even the movie theaters are, she said the seats on the bus were 100 times more comfortable than
really?
Seats in the movie theaters.
Like folding chairs, basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's
okay.
like, it's very uncomfortable, mm-hmm. very, you know, moldy mm-hmm. smell. The theater, nothing's been updated.
Yeah.
It was sort of, I think that's what happened is like, when things changed in 1959, that's why all the cars are still from the 50s,
right.
60s. That was
frozen in time.
It just froze in time.
Right.
And nothing got updated. You know, nothing.
Yeah.
It just stopped. So I think the point is, I think the organizers were up against a much bigger battle than they ever anticipated.
Right.
Ever. That every single venue, every single night had to be quadruple confirmed.
Yeah.
And then even then, people weren't there.
Right.
And the people that were there didn't necessarily want to work with you or listen.
Well, I'm going to try to catch a conversation then with John Rose, the main organizer of this, to kind of get his thoughts, because I know that it's kind of like a swan swimming across the pond, that it looks like it's effortless, but underneath you're just paddling like hell, you know. So I know that that's been the case for these guys. Because it's for the registrants, for me, I think things have gone okay, as long as you know that, hey, it's relaxed, you know, just kind of very poco, very slow, and don't expect things to be on time necessarily for a variety of reasons. Bus may be late, but, you know, whatever. There was only one thing that was on time. The one trick thing we had, the Un Truco contest, I was talking with somebody that they were supposed to start at 5:30, and this guy came down and he said, I was ready to go at 5:30, and they'd already awarded the thing by 5 o'clock or 5:15. It was already over. And that was the first thing that actually not only ran on time, it started early. And
right.
so, but that was something we had a control of, you know, I guess.
Right.
So that was too bad. Well, anyhow, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I think a lot of other people too did too. And it was always great spending some quality time with you. And it was it's been fun.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Chris. So for the Magic Word Podcast here in Havana, Cuba, that was Chris Korn. Scotty out.
Magic Cuba. Magic Cuba, yeah.
Mahikuban. All right, well, as we kind of continue with our wrap of the convention, or the festival, or conference, however you look at it, Magicuba, that one of the things we had as an activity was a thing called un truco, which means one trick. And the we had that, we were going to have it on three different nights, and I believe they had postponed the first evening and decided to do it on the next two evenings. And the idea was just that, that you do one trick, and then there would be a contest, which that a winner would be selected. And I'm sitting here with the winner, actually, who is a listener of the Magic Word Podcast, and we had chatted several times throughout the event. And so please welcome Mitch Praver. See, I start to say Praver. Praver, P-R-A-V-E-R. So, Mitch, hey, so welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys.
You had a great time?
It's good to be with you, and it's been great to spend some time with you and the rest of the magicians this week. It's been a great experience.
What has been your overall impression, really, kind of?
Well, there's so many. I think we're just beginning to process everything now. But
yeah.
This is my first time to Cuba, I guess, which is similar to most of the magicians that are here.
Right.
And
performers and registrants alike, for the most part. Yeah.
True. And most of these performers are such high-level magicians that I've studied for many years and admire so much. And it's been wonderful to spend quality time as tourists, basically together, in a strange land. So the impressions of Havana are many, and the impressions of the convention, the conference, are many. And the experience of the one-trick challenge is also, it was quite an experience.
Did you sign up well in advance, or did you say, well, I think I'll give it a shot while I'm here?
Well, I did check the box saying, it was a waiver saying that if I were to participate, I would be okay appearing in a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done several months ago. And the closer I got, I was still on the fence about it. And then when I arrived and saw the level of talent at this conference, so it's very intimidating. You know, we're here with some of the best magicians in the world, and when you see performers like Ossie Wind and who's one of the top card magicians in the world, and Chris Korn, one of the top coin magicians, and you know, you
Eric
start
Mead
to think twice.
And, yeah, everybody.
Yep. Yeah, and Eric Mead as well. Yeah, so they position the contestants, the participants in One Trick Challenge, following the pros.
Yeah.
So
to intimidate you just even further.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought, you know, sometimes it's good to get out of your comfort zone. I'm not a professional magician, but I've had a passion for close-up magic ever since I was in high school and have studied close-up magic for so many years. So I thought, it's one of those what-the-heck moments when you say, let's just do it.
That's right.
Throw caution
to the
wind.
When are you going to have another opportunity to perform in Cuba?
In Cuba and in front of these fine magicians.
Right.
And to get positive feedback and negative feedback is quite worthwhile.
Yeah.
And for the unlikely chance to appear in a documentary. So all of those thoughts went into my mind, but I thought I would move ahead.
Well, several things. I was thinking, because you work with National Geographic, and have you worked with any documentaries or thing with Nat Geo or anything on television at all as well?
Yes, I've worked with documentary makers, and I was actually asked to appear in another documentary, which I don't think we'll get into right now.
No, that's fine.
But I do have experience in television.
Right.
And in documentaries.
So it's not going to be intimidating, obviously, for you to be recorded or whatever.
No,
yeah.
Being on camera, being in the situation that we're in right now, it's not intimidating. Because most of my career I was in media, not only with National Geographic, but with Discovery Channel, and I was in charge of programming at Lifetime. And then I was at NPR, where I was COO for a while. But now I'm away from that.
Right.
And I'm working in early stage technology companies, but my passion for magic has transcended that entire line.
Well, for the one trick challenge, I think the challenge for the magician is to decide what is that one trick.
That is the toughest question.
So, did you decide what you? And let me just first of all describe to the audience from my perspective what I saw, and you can correct. Well, it was whatever, but it was basically the three cards were signed, selected, and signed, and then placed into a Ziploc baggie, and then you had on a blindfold so that you could feel the right card that belonged to each of the people, basically.
Yeah.
Correct? That would be a good explanation. You can explain the effect better than me.
Yeah, no, that's the theme of the trick that I chose to use was the theme of a blind magician.
Yeah.
And I have been really impressed over the years with how magicians who have handicaps have
like Richard Turner.
Like Richard Turner, like Wayne Dobson.
Right.
Like
Monty Gilbert.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. How they've overcome their handicap to become
an outstanding
magician.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's been resonating in my head, and I've been looking to develop a lecture on that topic.
Oh, interesting.
So one of the magicians that you just mentioned is Richard Turner. So I started to think about a possible routine.
Mm-hmm.
If I were a blind magician, what type of effect would I want to do? That would be incredible. And I read about Richard, his ability to feel, since he feels cards probably 12 hours a day, a deck of cards never leaves his hands.
That's right.
He's constantly shuffling. He can detect the slightest difference in the weight of a card, the degree of friction in a card, the surface of a card, and even the cut of a card, the angle of the blade that's used to cut the card when it's being manufactured, or the degree of the roundness of the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what interested me and intrigued me. So I wrote a routine around that. And as Scott said, three cards were freely selected and signed, and the deck was mixed by the three participants, and they threw the cards into a clear plastic bag, and with a blindfold on, I was able to find those cards,
right.
Replicating what it might be like to be a magician who is blind. Totalmente ciego, as they say in Espanol.
Okay. And so going back to selecting that trick among others in your repertoire.
Yeah, I thought about doing something visual because there was a table. There was a table there, but it was very difficult for the people in the second and third row to see what was on that table. So I wanted to do something that would occur while I was standing, that could be seen in the back of the room, and that would have a context. There was a lecture by
Michael Gaudeau.
Michael Gaudeau.
Yes.
And he talked about breaking premises and asking questions and creating context for your magic. Because sometimes magicians use magic, like, why would they have linking rings with them? Or why would they have
These strange objects. Basically,
so,
right.
So I wanted to create a routine that had context, that made sense. And the context was that I've had the opportunity to travel the world and see the top magicians in the world. And my favorite card magician happened to be a card magician who is blind. That was the premise.
Okay.
And I got that from Michael. And then I also took a piece of advice from Chris Korn,
mm-hmm.
who you just interviewed. And Chris's lectures ended with the concept of being proud to be a magician.
Right.
And the opening line of my script was, I'm proud to be a student of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done intentionally, one, to show pride in magic, but also to get across that I'm not a professional. So what I'm about to show you, If I could convince the audience that it wasn't a trick,
mm-hmm.
which it was, don't tell anybody,
yeah.
it would be a miracle.
Right, right. I think that was the right trick, obviously, to have selected.
Thank you.
Because that you got top prize, so you got to be in the documentary.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. God knows what this documentary will look like.
They've already shot it. They've already filmed you?
Okay. They've already filmed it, and I guess it'll be maybe a month or two before it's
I don't know what they're going to do with it, yeah.
But, yeah, there was one person who was following us around taking video. It looked like through a home video camera.
Yeah.
But we'll hope for the best, because I hope that this experience will be captured, because it's a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Right.
And we've all thoroughly enjoyed it. Anything that could go wrong did go wrong, but that was to be expected, and we were warned about that.
Right.
Because it's Cuba. But I think, without exception, we all had a wonderful time. We developed very strong relationships. We were together all day long and all night long. And
right.
It was almost like summer camp.
Good point. Good analogy. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was great to get to know you as well, Scott. So,
well, thank you. You're flattering.
I feel like I've known you because I listen to your podcast, so regularly.
Well, thank you for doing that.
But it's great to see you in the flesh.
Well, thank you. And thanks a lot for being on the podcast and giving us your reflections then as well. And again, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Safe travels.
Same to you.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Mitch Praver. This is Scotty out.
Magic Cuba. Magic Cuba, yeah.
All right, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it is the fifth and final day of the convention, as we had said a little bit earlier, and a lot of the conversation or controversy, it might be, that was on Facebook got started by this guy right here, John Archer. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
So I'm fine. You must be doing very well then, too, kind of take a finally a breath of relief that all this is behind you?
Yeah, do you know what? I enjoyed the gig, even though it was an impossible gig to do.
Yeah, I was just
enjoying it because I knew I had enough friends out there that were enjoying my struggle as well.
Oh, we did.
So
explain exactly what happened, so everybody kind of knows from the start. To
well, the show had been advertised as a Magic Cuba English speaking event. But it was in a large nightclub that was a music venue and a dance venue on a Saturday night. So basically, there was, I don't know, 200 or 300 Cubans who didn't speak English, and then 40 or 50 people who'd managed to stay awake till 12 o'clock to watch my show, who did speak English.
But maybe some who couldn't understand your English accent, so you can add those.
Then I've got the thing of even Americans not understanding me. So it was just a challenge of everybody, you know, just 200 people chatting to each other because they didn't know who this guy was on stage. And me just deciding to try and get through it with a little bit of dignity.
Right. And as well you did. And I thought the lines you were saying are perfect. You played with the audience and saying that I'll be here all week, but it's only really going to be 10 minutes, but it seems like all week or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. And I wish I'd brought more material and things like that. Yeah, I just decided all I could do is make jokes about the situation for the people who could understand me and try and entertain, you know, the 40 or 50 people in the room and let the other people, you know, you can't blame the other people for talking.
No.
You know, I'm speaking the wrong language.
40 or 50 people. So I think everybody had enjoyed it. It was because they had one act that did a quick change, and so that kind of kept everybody entertained because it was just music and fast paced and everything like that. But then when you have a talking act from mostly Spanish people Cuban people who only speak one language, you know, who were there really to dance and to make friends and drink, and it was late at night, and then you had the conflict also with all the strobe lights and were going on out there as well.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a nightclub was happening in front of me. But I don't blame the audience.
Did it look that way from your standpoint? I mean, we were looking at it from one angle. You're actually from the stage looking out.
It did, and of course, it's a huge room, high ceiling. There's a balcony set back.
Did you see anybody out there?
Oh yeah, I could see everybody.
There was no spot, I guess. Yeah. That's true.
No, there was no spots. I could see everybody, and I could see sort of the convention people. You know, I could see sort of, you know, Eric Mead and Matt King and all the guys sort of sat there, sort of chuckling away and enjoying, reveling in every moment. But
because you weren't dying, you know, at all. I don't think you were.
Well, it was one of those things that, you know, to some of the audience, I was dying. You know, but like I said, you can't blame the audience in a way because they didn't speak the language, and I would be exactly the same if I was with a group of my friends, a huge group, and some Italian guy came on doing Italian. You would eventually start talking to each other. You can't understand what's going on. If I had a more visual act, I might have still had a chance.
Well, the music added to it.
Yeah, the music added to it, and every now and again you'd get a reaction. You know, when I pulled the money out of the envelope, I went, "Oh wow!" But yeah, it was what it was, and it was fun. I mean, I was sort of enjoying the madness of it all, and I was sort of laughing inside, which is why I was making all the jokes about how crazy it was. And then afterwards, of course, it was just this, it was just great to come back to the hotel and just, you know, everybody just laughing about the nonsense of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because, so many people here are professionals and work, none of them, you know, everybody understood the situation.
Like that.
Yeah. So it was great.
Good
job.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot,
Scott. Appreciate
it, John. Yeah, take care.
Safe travels.
Yeah,
cheers
you too. Hope I'll see you soon.
Sooner than later, hopefully.
Yeah.
So the Magic Word Podcast. That was John Archer. Scotty out.
Magic Cuba. Magic Cuba,
All right, well, it's still the fifth day, just kind of going over a few things that have been happening over the convention as a recap. And I'm here then with the first vice president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, Mr. Don Greenberg. Hey there, Don.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm the vice president. They don't call it the first vice president.
What do they call
anymore.
It? It's just vice president.
Vice president, yeah.
It's not a first and second anymore.
No, there's the vice president and the president-elect.
Okay.
The president-elect was the first vice president, and the second vice president is now just vice president. That's me, yeah. That's okay. What I am.
So two more years, then you'll be stepping in.
No.
Is that how that works?
Nope. It's not
anymore,
guaranteed.
Huh?
No, nothing's guaranteed. Nothing's in stone.
But which leads me to kind of what we were going to talk about. I want to talk about the convention here just a moment. But one of the things that you did was that we had a ceremony in which that you had inducted a new ring here in Havana.
Yeah, I wear a few hats on the Board of Trustees. My position right now previously was as an executive committee member, and now I'm the vice president. But the president, Michael Finney, the international president, Michael Finney, also carried me over and maintained my position as international ring coordinator. So that's a separate function. I'm wearing two hats, but I'm the guy that facilitates groups of magicians in different locations around the world in their attempts to start a new ring, a new chapter, a local chapter of the IBM. And we've been working for quite a while here in Cuba. We started about 5 years ago with our first attempt, and let's just say it didn't work out really well. We tried and it fell through. I was contacted by a friend of mine who I met in Moscow named John Rose. And John Rose, John Stetson, and Bill Herz were three folks. John was the leader of that dysfunctional little family. And he and his firm, his promotions firm, were putting on this Magic Cuba conference here in Cuba. And he contacted me and said, I remember you had spoken before about a ring in Cuba and it didn't work out. Would you like to try again? And so we did, and it would not have happened without John. John was the conduit, and he had all the contacts, and he made sure everything happened.
The liaison, a facilitator to make it happen.
He was amazing, absolutely amazing. There is nobody that doesn't like John. He has no enemies. He has all friends, and everybody knows him everywhere. So it worked out very well for us, and he's very. John was very focused on the organization and the IBM's. Purpose of increasing everything positive for magic as a craft.
Well, since he's involved also with Russia, do you think he'll be opening a ring?
Well, actually, that's how we got to know we have a ring in Moscow. Okay. We have a ring. The Moscow ring has most of its members have continued operating down in Saratov, a couple hundred miles south of Moscow, and that is. There's some question about whether or not they want to continue doing that or reform Moscow ring and form a new Saratov ring. But John is, when I first started traveling to Moscow, I was put in touch with John. It just worked out very perfectly. He was, from what I understand, John is the only American citizen who has residency status in both Russia and Cuba. And so everything fell into place. Perfect storm of convenience and residency and acquaintance. And it was marvelous. But he was the guy that introduced me to a few other people in Moscow. And I went over as the ring coordinator and was welcomed there and talked with all of the Moscow magicians as well. That ended up in an article in the Linking Ring about 4 or 5 years ago. So,
well, as far as Cuba goes and this Magic Cuba convention, how have you... What are your thoughts on this now that it's over?
It was wonderful. It was amazing. It was entertainingly disorganized. In spite of all of Galena...
Disorganized?
Yeah, it was...
Okay.
It was pleasantly chaotic. How's that?
That's better.
That's better?
Because I thought it was organized, but just there were some issues that they had to deal with, obviously.
But they were charming.
Yes.
Everything that happened, all of the delays... And all the miscommunications, everybody here, I think it's partially because it was such a small group of people, and many of them were already acquainted with each other. They got along so well.
Sure, it was a good time to hang out. So if you had to wait a little bit longer, you had a longer conversation.
Yeah, we had so many great conversations because we were standing around in the horrible weather of Cuba.
Right, or on the bus while you're waiting.
Or drinking those terrible mojitos and daiquiris. Just
somebody had to help get rid of the rum down here.
We had to endure the sudden...
So what did you learn or who did you see and what was a memory as far as a takeaway and you'll say, man, this was one of the best things when you think back on it?
You know, as far as the Cuban magicians are concerned and the Cuban magicians and they're in the ones that have joined the IBM, they are excited and passionate and enthusiastic and they have... varying levels of skill. Some of them are very skilled. Some of them are developing in their skill level. But they are all, they just love magic and they want to do it and they want to keep getting better. I was really impressed with them. The new president, Roger Ruiz, he's hard to stop. He is always performing. He wants to share and he wants to talk with you. And he's sincere and incredibly he cares about the people that are in his organization, in the organization that he is now the a charter member of and the first president of this ring, Ring 399.
And there is a mentor, a teacher, Gardini.
Yeah.
Yes.
He runs a school. I didn't get the opportunity to spend a lot of time with him, but I did meet a couple of his students, a young teenage couple that are doing a mentalism act, and they are 15 and 16 years old. I wish I could tell you their names. I think the young man's name is David. I forget the girl's name. But I think that they worked for a couple of the folks, a couple of the conventioneers the other day. I only spoke with them a few times. I didn't see them perform. But they do a second sight act that is quite developed for that. Remember, this country has been somewhat isolated.
They can't get Wi-Fi and still don't very well, but they have problems, of course, ordering things even online, and of course don't have the funds even for it once that they could get on.
And so a lot of the things that they see, they are either inventing new methods or guessing and getting the methods partially. Yeah, exactly. And so to see a 15 and 16-year-old boy and girl reverse engineer and develop their own code, their own second sight code, and do it successfully and very quickly. Apparently, she's fast. She is really fast. She gets it right away. And the guys said, no, he wasn't able to, they didn't pick up on the code. So that's impressive.
I mean, right.
That's the only thing I saw of Gardini's school are these two. Everybody that I met is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Very friendly people.
Beyond friendly. Instant family, I think, is a better way to describe it. And that's one of the things I like about the IBM. Every city I go to, everywhere in the world, and I travel a little bit, and everywhere I go, I've instantly got a family, and it's amazing. It's just fantastic. And it's so nice that we have, for the first time ever, this new little installation of the IBM family here in Cuba for the first time.
That's great.
Things are thawing quite a bit.
Well, thanks very much for instituting the ring.
I can't. Well, it wasn't really. I'm just part of a. I'm just a cog in the wheel. It just everything came together very well. I really enjoyed. It wasn't just the local Cuban magicians either here. This particular conference was threat free. It was just relaxing. Everything was positive and pleasant. The most unpleasant thing that happened that I saw was last night. John Archer. Faced an audience that was, let's just say, tough.
Yeah.
They were hard to, and he is honestly one of the most professional performers I have ever seen. Everything he did was dripping with professional competence.
Right.
I already thought he was one of the best, and I have nothing but increased respect for him after that. I got to talk to him a little bit. Of course, my conversation, just catching up with you, has been fantastic. I really enjoyed that. Spent some time with Chris Korn, and Chad Long has been very. These folks are big, huge names, and it's a small crowd, so they're very anxious to sit around and just chat.
Yep, that's been. I think the intimacy is one of the things that is a hallmark of this convention, then too. Well, Don, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for asking. We'll catch up with you later.
You bet. So for the Magic Word Podcast, I was Don Greenberg. This is Scotty out in Havana, Cuba.
Magic Cuba. Yeah.
All right, well, Scott Welch for the Magic Word Podcast. And again, I thought a wrap-up would not be sufficient unless we talk with the organizers. I have John and John. First of all, John Rose.
Hello.
And John Stetson.
Hello.
So you recognize their voices as they speak. Thank you both for putting together such a wonderful conference. It's been a lot of work on your behalf. And we talked, you know, a year ago, whatever it was, about some of the challenges you were looking at then. You've probably found some other challenges since then that have come up.
If we had only known. If we had only known. Every time they zig, I zag.
Yeah.
And it has been quite a challenge to be able to put on this this festival and conference. Because remember that our mission here was to put on a festival of magic for the
people.
Cuban people.
Right.
And the conference was something we created to bring down a bunch of magicians for a couple of different reasons. One is to help offset our costs of putting on this big festival. But more importantly, we got a chance to bring some great guys to Cuba. A lot of people were very excited about the idea of being able to go to Cuba, and we were able to provide for many Americans a legal way of coming into Cuba. And so we ended up...
For the acts and attendees.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. For the acts and the attendees. And we ended up with a lot of non-magicians who came. I mean, we were joking about this before when we did the podcast over a year ago, that, you know, a lot of magic conventions, a lot of the wives and girlfriends say, another magic convention? I don't want to go there. This one was, you're not going without me.
Right. That's true. Yeah, notice that also, that I think every performer's wife came as well.
Right, exactly. And had a hell of a good time, I think. Yeah. And, you know, it was pretty packed with activity. I think we had a lot of things going on.
Was there?
On.
Boy, back to back. I never had a chance to really talk with many people for a lengthy time because there was no 1 hour of a slot, you know. And when you did, it was after midnight, and then, you know, to get some sleep sometime.
Well, maybe they just didn't want to talk to you, Scott.
No, I began to feel that way. But.
No, but you know what was interesting, I think, about this conference from any other conference, at least as we're talking about the conference part of this, because the festival was so overwhelming to the whole process, but that we're all having our meals together. You know, everybody's breaking bread together. And so my perspective was I got to talk to more people at this as a conference than almost any other conference
That's
I've
true.
Been to.
That's true.
And I don't think I would have gotten a chance to sit down and talk to all these people as often or as frequently as I would have at any place else we would have gone in the U.S.
Well, I think you kind of undersold this to begin with because to me this was like a land cruise. You know, basically it was all-inclusive kind of a thing, and I don't think that people recognized what all that they were going to be getting for the value, you know.
Yeah, I think that people weren't quite sure what to expect, and I don't think anybody can appreciate the extent we had to go to organize all of these activities
right.
in Cuba.
Right.
I mean, from never mind just putting on a conference, but from booking restaurants to getting people in and out of the country and visas and transportation and so forth, all being done in Cuban style, which is, I think, a situation where we were always, I think, moments away from disaster at any moment in time. Lots of things that may or may not happen, not because of our organization and everything else that we're
right.
doing, but because the Cubans have a different perspective of time than some of the rest of us do. And, you know, a lot of situations that we had to wrestle with as we were, this whole thing was unfolding.
These things would arise, and any one of them, I could see an American organizer going, do you believe this happened? You know, it being the major crisis catastrophe.
Right.
We had this every 10 minutes, it seems.
Well, the good news about any of these disasters was they were easily forgotten because there was always another one coming. So
get past that, we'll put out another fire.
Exactly. So that each event was a situation where, you know, we may have to cancel this, we may have to do that. Frankly, I think it went, at least from all appearances to the attendees, it looked like it came across pretty seamlessly. But we were using a lot of glue and rubber bands and spit to hold this whole thing together along the way. And I think it actually ended up working out well. And I
How
think
many people were part of your team doing it?
Well, the team on the ground here. I mean, we had teams in the U.S., Russia, and Cuba. And so we had about a dozen some odd people touching this every minute. But remember, we're working with Cuban organizations like Paradiso, which is the big travel group that's part of the Ministry of Culture here. And they managed, you know, all of the transportation and ostensibly the hotel reservations and so forth. But then our team would have to go in and actually make sure that those were going to actually happen.
And when John says Russia throws that in, I think we should really let your listeners know that John's primarily in Russia. And he has business here and business there, John Rose. And if it weren't for him knowing how to deal with, no one else could have done this.
Right.
It's
been a long time
other
coming.
Than John Rose, and so things would be going from Russia to here to back and forth. And of course, key thing here is the inability to communicate with phone and text and internet reception and all this stuff. So it's producing this in 1932, only the phone service was better then.
Exactly. Also, you say, I appreciate you saying no one else could have done this, but I think I hear no one else would have been foolish enough to attempt this.
How do you think the government feels after this is over? Do you think it was a success from their standpoint?
In so much as anyone being paid $40 a month can care about anything, yes. I think that they probably are very excited about it.
But, I mean, I know this was a cultural exchange, if you will, and we're here for that special kind of a thing. So.
I think that seeing how...
It's entertaining people. I wonder if they feel as if that their people were entertained.
I think so, because I think that also as the days went on, because we got a five-day festival here, as the days went on, the audiences in all the venues grew. You know, you saw that. We're going to these different shows, and you know, they have a lot of walk up. You know, it's not a lot of advanced ticketing. So, you know, we weren't quite sure how the venues would fill. And we also had some shows that were English, some shows that were Spanish, and we had some great entertainers. Some of them went off, you know, beautifully and were very well received, and others, you know, I think we had, maybe there were some language problems. Our people had a good time.
Right.
But I think that, you know, some Spanish audiences, I think, you know, they've never seen live magic before. I think they were, just, you know, mystified in so many different ways.
You know, the style of magic here is pretty much... I mean, they're creative guys and everything, but they only have so much they can work with.
Yeah.
And so, for example, because of the proximity to Miami, Fantasio products made their way down here.
Looms large over the Cuban magic scene.
It's almost like in China during the Cultural Revolution. You know, when the Chinese acrobats first came over... They said, oh, we're going to see magic. We're going to see Chinese magic. And the curtain went up for the magic act, and it was white tie and tails.
But that's all they knew.
Because of, you know, Cardini 1948 kind of thing. That was the style. So we were expecting more traditional Chinese magic. But that's what they knew, and that's what they were teaching.
Right.
And these guys here, once again, they're incredibly clever. But the thing that, especially that I think your listeners will enjoy, is they are so passionate. It's almost as if magic had the same speed bumps in America, people would be into it for 2 months and then go, okay, I'm done.
Right.
Kind of stuff.
They don't get discouraged, basically.
Yeah.
The passion is so deep.
Yeah. And that's the thing that really impressed me about these guys.
Well, I'm hoping that what this has done then for the Cuban public in general is to appreciate magic as an art, performing art, such that they're wanting to see more of it, which will encourage more of the local magicians in Cuba to perform and get out and do more shows and everything.
We hope so. That was part of what we wanted to do.
I think we really wanted to give an opportunity to profile and feature the Cuban magicians to our attendees, okay? Working performers and...
Close-up stage, everything.
Everything. And yeah, we tried to make sure we had all sorts of different kinds of magic going on and a big mix of Cuban and international acts. And... You know, it was great for the performers because I think that the international performers were as excited about working and seeing the Cuban acts as the Cuban acts were as in seeing them. Which, you know, putting this on over the last several months, what I really saw was the enthusiasm of the Cubans. They were like school children, you know, in anticipation of all of this happening. And the idea that they were going to be shoulder to shoulder with some of their heroes in magic, whom they've only seen in YouTube clips.
Yeah. To see Matt King walk by.
Right.
Not walk by, but spend time with them and talk to them like peers.
Right.
That was the thing that I think was shattered this whole image of what these guys, these heroes,
we chose the people we chose.
Yeah, they were touchable.
Exactly. We had everybody, you know, in very social settings. You know, magical mojitos. You know, it's a close up session meets happy hour.
Right.
That creates a different kind of a vibe than your typical magic conference.
Well, they're starting to close because they're serving dinner. We need to go and give it a seat in a minute. But that has to do with the obvious question that's hanging is about next year or future years. Will there be or never say never? Or what is the plan, if any, for the future here or in Russia or elsewhere?
Well, never say never. But I don't know that we're going to be doing Cuba again anytime real soon. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. It's a very expensive endeavor to put on a festival across the city of Havana. The Cubans have no money. So that's how this whole thing, you know, this began as, how are we going to put on this festival? So we brought in a bunch of money, and we invited a bunch of attendees to our conference, and we brought in a little bit of sponsorship, but it's an expensive endeavor, and I'm not sure that we'll be able to do it anytime soon, at least not in the way we did it now.
That's what I was thinking.
Because there's no money at the gate. In other words, the Cubans pay very little money to go to these shows. I mean, the same show that's in Vegas for $150, a Cuban is getting for about 40 cents. It's very difficult to justify how to make all the financial model work.
That's a good point.
For the amount of time and manpower involved. You know, John's company, people were exclusively working on Magic Cuba for the longest time. And I don't see any
U.S. convention. You know, I know Magic Live, they've got a big gang of everything. But to have so many people who have to be paid, taking care of everything. Right. Though they take they take care of everything, John's the one who has to direct. And he's done a masterful job. It's incredible.
Well, again, thank you guys very much.
Thank
I appreciate
Scott.
It.
I think I see your appetizer being brought to the table right now.
I think
now.
It's time to have a little more lobster.
There's one thing I want to say in closing. As I said on the podcast the other day, it's like if I had any idea people listen to this, I would have been not saying most of the things that I've said through the years on his podcast, number one. But because of your spreading the word with Magic Cuba, not just once, but several times,
right.
That's the way many people found out about us and why they're here. So we'd like to thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. Yeah, you being here was very special for us and a great endorsement of the event. And I appreciate you being here.
And you did an awful lot personally for the Cuban rum and cigar industry.
I
have not seen you. The only time I do not see you with a drink and cigar is when you're holding this Don King doll. That people, I only wish that everybody could see the microphone that you use.
Fuzzy hair.
And it's been all around the world. It's got that fuzzy hair standing on end.
Yeah.
But lots of great things go into there and come out of it thanks to you.
Well, thank you. Well, I want to thank you and also all the guys you brought in that gave me an opportunity to chat with some of these guys in detail because I know all the people have been so curious. You know, and I'm not going, but I sure want to hear about what it's going to be like. I know that there'll be a lot who will be listening to this. And are all saying, I wish I was there. Even the posts we were able to make on Facebook when the Wi-Fi was working, everybody was saying, man, I wish I would have been there. Oh, I could have gone. It sounds so fun.
Well, I got to tell you, if enough people write us, tell us they really, really want to come.
Yeah, that's why you never say never.
Never say never.
You never know.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, John. Thank you, John. It's been
the
best.
We'll let you know about the next big thing.
Okay. We have some magic and mojitos. Let's go out and have another
one. Let's go. All right.
It's the Magic Word Podcast. John Rose and John Stetson. This is From Havana, Cuba, and Magic Cuba, Scotty out.